So we don't like to feel uncomfortable, right? So we do what we can to feel comfortable and to also feel like we're going to be viewed in a good light. People get really uncomfortable thinking about other people being unhappy with them.
What's up, y'all? Welcome to another episode of the Less Rock Podcast. I am your co-host, Philosophical.
And I'm your co-host, Jay Echo. What's good?
What's going on, y'all? As you can see, we have an illustrious guest, a highly requested guest by my co-host, Miss Siobhan Jack. She is a therapist, a licensed mental counselor, life coach, author, founder, and she's also listed in the Psychology Today. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited.
Yes, yes. Her book is called A Road Traveled, My Therapeutic Journey. And it's, and as I'm saying this right, Therapeutic Tracker, correct?
Yes, correct.
Yep. And her website is also at www.createanewcounseling.com. And her IG is also Creating New Counseling on Instagram. Welcome, welcome, Miss Siobhan.
Thanks
welcome.
For having me. I'm so excited. I feel like I'm giggling like a little schoolgirl.
Definitely, definitely, definitely. So I want to first speak on, you know, I know a lot of times, you know, in today's society, you know, therapy is such a apprehension and also a fear of going, right? So I just kind of want to put a caveat slash informational comment on the fact that, you know, therapy is good. Therapy is something that's, it's not saying you rushing to go into it or rushing to get to it right away. We are
find
both
the right one.
Find the right one, or if you're feeling like you need to speak to someone, you're not very comfortable going to a therapist, you know what I mean? Trust in someone, one of your closest circle to have those conversations with, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, but as of tonight, today, we'll do the work for you. We have a licensed therapist on the show for you guys. So love to hear you guys' questions, comments, engagements with her. Make sure you guys follow her, follow us. And we're going to go ahead and get started. Kind of the first requested question here is, you know, we've been kind of speaking on people pleasing, right? So let's get right into it on why, not necessarily you, but people in general put others first. Let's first speak on that. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, Philosophical, great. First question, I would say that people pleasing is way more common than people realize.
Okay.
And it's to the point where if you tell someone, or even I, as a therapist, when I tell a client that they're people pleasing, I get one of two reactions. Either I get the first reaction of, oh my gosh, how did you know? And they feel like they've been seen. Or I get the other reaction, like, I don't care what people think. I'm not a people pleaser. And it's like, yes, sweetheart, you are. And then I list always a people please, and they're like, dang, you're right, I am. People pleasing is so common because, first of all, why people do it, it's usually a learned behavior. So when you're growing up, your parents always teach you to do the right thing, right? Even when no one's looking, think of others. And doing the right thing and thinking of others often is about seeing what somebody else needs and trying to meet that need. But the problem is when it's a learned behavior, you're not thinking of what you need. You're learning to put your stuff aside so you can please and make sure somebody else's need is met. So usually it's a learned behavior, and you know, old habits just die hard. Unfortunately, they can die, but they die hard. You know, a little Bruce Willis going on there. So it's usually learned behavior, and you're looking at the collective whole. The second reason why people put others first, because just general people pleasing, period. People get really uncomfortable thinking about other people being unhappy with them. Thinking I'm responsible for I'm just going to make up a name for Alex crying, or I could have done something to help Ashley or to help Raekwon, but I didn't do it. And they start to internalize it and judge themselves. So we don't like to feel uncomfortable, right? So we do what we can to feel comfortable and to also feel like we're going to be viewed in a good light. Doesn't it feel good, y'all, when people say, oh, I know, Jay, he always looks out for you. Or he's such a good listener. You know, they praise you for things that you do for them, which leads us to the third reason why people put others first is performative. Now, that doesn't mean you're doing it just to get praise or just to be looked at in a good light, but it's just the idea of doing things because you feel like it's the right thing to do. And you're always constantly just go, go, go. You're doing things because that's the way you were raised or that's what society says you should do. You're performing. You're not really looking at why you're doing it, which leads to another reason. The fourth reason why we put other people first, a lot of times it's our belief system. We don't think about who we are and our worth. A lot of times we give advice to other people or we give grace or forgiveness or compassion to other people, but we don't do it for ourselves because we don't believe we're worthy of it.
So let me just clarify, right? The four reasons you're saying are behavior, performance, patterns, and the fourth one you said, I'm sorry.
Is a value.
Belief system. Okay. So let's equate that to relationships and even marriage, right? Mm-hmm. And from my personal story and kind of experience, I feel like I equate all four, right, to myself, because I feel like in order to please yourself, right? And I've learned this the hard way, right? And we even say patterns. In order to please yourself, you have to feel like you're pleasing others around you.
Yes.
Right. And feeling like the performance part about it is, let's equate it to relationships. Doing things, performance things, even in the bedroom, buying things, doing, we'll even call it in world society, simping, right?
Right.
Certain simping things, right, to get a certain like expression response or an expression from your partner, right, to feel like, okay, hey, I'm doing these things, which also shows that person views me as potentially being valuable to them.
Yes,
but on the other end of it, I think that, what are you getting out of it as a person? What are you receiving out of it? Is it reciprocated, right? And my experience and what I've seen 9 times out of 10 is not. I don't know what you guys feel about that, how you guys feel about that. Do you agree, disagree?
Personally, I people are going to hear this. People hear this a lot from me, but I agree and disagree. I think... Okay. I think, yes, some of it is about a lot of it, like Siobhan said, it's about what the other people think, but also it's about comfortability, like the feeling of where, so I don't, Siobhan, I don't know how much of our content you've watched, but I like to go back to things like evolutionary psychology, philosophy, that type of stuff. So I'm gonna jump into that a little bit now. But I think from an evolutionary standpoint, we're social creatures. We seek out community, and being disliked from an evolutionary standpoint, being disliked is a good way to find yourself isolated and alone and in a dangerous position, especially when, back in the day. And when I say back in the day, I'm not talking about, the good old days, the 50s, 60s, 70s. I'm talking about like prehistoric times when, if you were by yourself in the woods, you would literally die. Like that's what it was. But now, like we still have that in us. That's still part of us. So, you know, from an instinctual perspective, we're all sitting there just like, look, for my survival, I need people to at least like me enough to not throw me into the woods by myself. So we'll do things that are counter to our own personal gain. I think the areas I disagree are, I think we've conditioned ourselves to ignore those instincts to a negative degree.
Let me ask a quick question. Your instincts, are you, because I'm trying to just clarify here, are you equating instincts to intuition?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Good. Okay.
So even though we want to be liked, we'll do things that go the opposite way. Before it was, okay, we do things to be liked because we want to be part of the group. But now we do things to be liked, even though they can sometimes put us in danger. Meaning we end up with bad partners and bad relationships and bad mental states because we're doing the things for the sake of likability as opposed to community. Let's say that.
Okay.
I like that. To give another little perspective, if you will, off what you said. Something you hit on, Jay, that I tell clients all the time is that the human experience is about connectivity. Literally, we thrive off of connection, period. That's why, trigger warning, during the pandemic, suicides increased because you're isolated. We were all in our houses. Well, most of us, right? I lived in Florida. Florida didn't believe in quarantine.
But, y'all were just out. Yes.
Yeah. Let's out there. Thanks, DeSantis. Not, but we quarantined for a very short period of time. But the nation as a whole was quarantined for a while, right? And you would hear things like people say, I'm going stir crazy because they couldn't get out. Suicides increase and also drug use, which I know you may find kind of weird because you're like, well, where are you getting this from? Like, you're inside. But if you have an addiction, you're going to make sure it gets fed. And the problem is people were home, so they didn't have things to distract them, right? I got an influx personally as a therapist. I got an influx of clients who were in relationships because they realized, oh my gosh, my partner's driving me crazy. I've never been around them for so long. What is going on? So point is, we thrive off connection. So I'm so glad you said that. So when we don't feel like we're connected to somebody, we find ourselves doing things outside of our own norms or even our own belief systems to make sure that we're accepted. Here's the danger of it. That's where you go into codependency a lot of times. And when codependency shows up, that's when the relationship starts to get a little jacked up. Because
sorry, not to interrupt. I'm sorry. Can you define codependency for people who?
Yes.
I was gonna ask that, but I was gonna let it finish. I want to make sure. Is codependency mean you start relying on a person more than you rely on yourself? I guess that's kind of what. Because I would love to hear that answer too.
Okay, so I'm glad y'all said that because sometimes that's a therapy problem. You're so used to certain terms. You're like, oh, everybody knows what this is. And it's like,
okay,
oh, sweetheart, they don't. So thank y'all for stopping me on that. Codependency is not necessarily just relying on somebody else. It is where you actually, and I hate to use a word in a definition, but I have to. It is when you become dependent on that other person in order for you to be able to sustain or to thrive.
Okay.
So when you are codependent, it will look like this. People who are very, very clingy, very attached, they're very insecure. They struggle making decisions without calling their partner or getting their partner's input first. They may be very fearful of the relationship breaking up. So if you're upset with them, they're thinking, oh my gosh, this is it. This is the end. Like, are you trying to break up with me? What's going on? People who are codependent is usually a lack of a secure attachment. Secure attachment looks like this. My husband and I, because I'm actually married, we're together. If he leaves to go to the grocery store, I don't need to call him, right? I know he's going to come back. Now, say if I know my husband, and it sounds so juvenile, but these are real things, right?
Oh, I'm getting ready to explain why they are real things, because I have some questions.
Okay. If my husband normally spends an hour in the grocery store, but if he's gone for two, I may become rightfully so concerned and reach out like, hey, just making sure you're okay, but not giving him a third degree burn. Another example of codependency, because some people are not, it's not that basic, right? It could be something okay. like this.
Okay.
My husband says, hey, I have a work trip and I need to be gone just overnight. And I am like, absolutely not. You're not going, because I feel when he's not physically here or if he's not within my realm of communication or sight, I withdraw internally. My security starts to go down and I need him around. So codependency is that very unhealthy attachment on someone outside of yourself in order for you to feel secure within yourself.
I have a lot of questions, right? I have a lot of questions about this. First question is, I'll lump all these questions so we can kind of answer them all, because if not, I'll forget them all. That same insecurity, that same feeling, like, what would we say, abandonment, right? Because that's kind of where it starts, right? Yeah. And also that fear of, you know, breaking up. I will say this, right? But it's also a question. It's okay, and I hope I don't get any trouble or any flack for saying this, right? But it is what it is. It is. It's okay for women to do this, right? To a point where I feel like men find that attractive.
Mm-hmm.
But when men do it, it's seen as
weak.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Why is that? That's my first question. Second question is that I was that man, right? To a point where I felt like very insecure, very like, you know, don't go anywhere, don't do anything. Even now sometimes, right? I'm a man that loves my peace and my space. But, you know, if my wife is gone for like hours, I'm like, man, it's quiet in this house. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't get that codependency of like, man, I need to call an APB, where is she at? Sometimes I do, but I know that I know from before, I used to think that, you know, and I feel like a lot of men and women do think this way when they're gone a certain amount of time, put out the bad signal, because it's a trigger to the fact that what's happened to me before, can it happen again? Right. So to wrap it up into two questions, my first question is, why is it okay for women to do this and men are seen as weak? Second question is it normal, you know, in a way that codependency isn't necessarily it's either, you know, you're not a man, you're weak, but it's a woman's part of her personality to act this way.
Those are some really good questions. First, I would say, why is it seen as women? It's okay for us. I'm just going to say be quote unquote clingy, but it's really more codependency than men.
Yeah.
I would say definitely societal construct. Because beginning of time, we've been perceived as damsel in distress, right?
Yes.
By nature, men are protectors and they're providers.
Yes.
So in order to be a protector and a provider, you have to be strong. And yes. We normally think of physical strength, but really it's about mental strength. You don't have to be in the gym pumping 300-500 pounds, deadlifting and all that to be strong, right?
Okay.
So being that y'all are protectors, providers, we're nurturers. When you are a nurturer as a woman, that's usually associated with emotion, because in order for me to nurture, in order for me to care, I have to be emotionally vulnerable and intimate. Intimate meaning bearing yourself open, right? Going in deeper levels.
Okay.
So when naturally we have more emotions, it is expressed more. And so if we miss you, it's, oh, I miss you, and you expect us to be all over you. But men, and it's so frustrating, but y'all are not afforded that same opportunity technically. to be as emotionally vulnerable and intimate and expressive. So y'all should be, according to society, a little bit more hardened and feel comfortable with not being around your woman, because you're also conditioned to know that we're replaceable. Even if you feel, even if you feel like we are one in a million, if you will, if you come across the right one, and I use that very loosely, still as women are expendable, like it's a dime a dozen, right? But as women, we're taught when you get a good man, girl, you better hold on to him, because they don't come around that often, not the good ones, because you should expect from men to not be as committed.
You don't feel some women, not to cut you off, you don't feel like some women feel like men are expendable also?
Now, yes.
Okay.
Times are changing, you know.
Okay. What are your thoughts on that?
Like, why do I think it, or do I agree with
it? Do you feel it's a good thing, it's a bad thing, or are we going down a path that it can really harm relationships and marriages? What are your thoughts on this? Just not to get off track, but.
No, it's fine. I love this conversation. I think the good thing about it is the root of it, because I'm a therapist. Okay. I'm going to say, screw the surface. I want to get to the meat and potatoes, the bones of it, right?
Okay.
The bones of women feeling like men are more expendable nowadays is just literally empowerment. If you want to call it feminism, if you want to call it liberation, whatever you want to put, whatever title on it, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's good that we're realizing our worth is not tied up on who's in our bed anymore, or how productive we're realizing it, but not everyone believes it, but we're realizing it, right? But where I feel like it's not good is because, and I think it goes for both sides.
Okay.
We should not be treating people as expendable, period.
Every single person
has worth. They have value. Even if that worth or value is not aligned with who you are, that doesn't mean that you treat them as trash or rubbish or another one. Instead, the perspective should be, okay, I see who Jay is. I see who Philosophical is. They're not the right man for me, but they'll be for somebody. So I'm going to be assertive enough to communicate that to them, to not ghost them. Okay. I'm so anti-ghosting, by the way. I get on my clients all the time when they ghost. Don't do it. Give people an explanation if necessary. And if you don't want to explain yourself, you just let them know, hey, this isn't working, but I appreciate you. Thank you. And you let them go, right? Which gives you closure. But still, I feel like we're not treating each other fairly, which goes back to your first question. About why it's accepted for women to do it, but not so much men. I don't like anybody doing it. I do my best to teach clients about codependency, period, because you have to be able to accept a person for who they are and let them operate in the essence of who they are. And then you decide, can I deal with that for the next 10 years or 10 days or however long it is you want to keep it, right? And if not, keep it moving. You don't have to stay. But when you become codependent, right, normally there's change there. Because if you're not presenting the way I need you to present in order for me to give that response, right, I'm going to do something to try to persuade you to act the way I need you to act. Here's an example in case people are like, what the heck is she talking about? Okay. When you're codependent, right, and you're worried about the relationship breaking up, you're going to say things and do things to get your partner to console you, to act and tell you that the relationship is not going to end. So at that point, I'm allowing my insecurity to sway who you are and how you show up in our relationship so that I can feel better and feel, okay, we're good, we're good. That's you trying to change your partner, technically.
Yeah. Yeah. And it kind of goes into my next question about happiness, right? Yeah. But you brought up a good point a couple moments ago, and I feel like I equate it to instant gratification, where if a man and woman doesn't show up in a certain package at that time, right, they're expendable, right? So my point is that where do you make the determination to the fact that if I'm going to, like, you are accepting the person, right? But let's be real. Some people feel like love doesn't pay the bills.
It doesn't. So
it doesn't. No. So let's get to where does a line drawn to where it's either you allow that person to be themselves and you grow in love, Or you say you stick it out and see what this person brings to the table right now that it may not necessarily be in the future, and just keep yourself closed off. Because I think that's kind of what it's doing, what's going on right now, right? It's that's why there's such a rapid rate increase in rate as far as divorces.
Yeah.
Such a horrible experience with dating, relationships. I think people are either looking for instant gratification, or it's like, all right, I'll stick it out. He has a lot of money. She has a lot of money. She has a nice job. He has a nice job. Let me see how I can elevate myself. So once I'm elevated, they're replaceable.
I'll add to that as well. I mean,
okay.
It feels like, for lack of a better term, it feels like we're doing it halfway. Meaning, okay, like we'll take the part of the lesson that's what I believe the lesson is, anyways. We'll take part of it that's what are we like, hey, I'm doing me, I'm okay, so you go on and live your life. But we're ignoring the part of it that is the attachment part of it, the codependency part of it. We'll okay. leave that part aside. We won't examine that part of it, but we'll internalize the part of, oh, this person isn't for me, so we'll let them go. We'll let them go extremely quickly.
So I wanna ask you, I'm sorry to cut you off, Jay. I wanna ask you a question, and maybe you can chime into that, Siobhan. Do you feel like attachment is very subjective? Because let's be real. What are you attaching? What are you attaching?
I would disagree, but I'm also not a therapist, so I want to hear.
Because I think attachment, being attached to something or someone, are two different things, right? You know, let's just be real. You know, I love my wife. I love being married to my wife. I'm attached to who she is.
Yeah.
How she is. You know, the person she is. I'm attached to the emotional foundation, the physical foundation, the mental foundation. But I feel like we as people sometimes, through the relationships we've been in, right, we attach to only one thing and kind of leave off the other things, right? Do you kind of agree? Do you disagree? What are your thoughts on that? I love to hear Jay's response to this one, or Siobhan's response to this.
I'll go first because I'm the least educated of the two of us.
So I guess my question is, do you feel like attachment is very subjective?
I would say, yes, it's subjective in that, you know, we're all individuals. We all have our individual experiences and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But I also think there are patterns that you can see in it. Going back to my version of research, I've been like listening to folks and reading a couple things, and there was this one gentleman who was, and I apologize. I'll see if I can remember and find it. But there was this one gentleman who was talking about attachment, and essentially his whole thing was, if we as people manage to fix our attachment issues, most of the problems in the world would go away. Yep. And that's because a lot of stuff stems from our attachment.
Yep.
But like I said before, the ways we attach are individual to us. So if you're trying to test for, hey, everybody just get your attachment in order, it's easier said than done.
And I feel like we as people, and I've done this myself, right? And I'll equate it to being attached to things that you missed out on or what's missing, right? Let's look at it this way. When I was younger, right? You know, I grew up poor, right? So I wasn't able to get a lot of things that I wanted when I was younger. So as I grew up, now I have the job, I'm able to make the money, I buy things that I tend to buy things that I wasn't able to get when I was younger because my parents couldn't afford it. So I think if we equate this to relationships, we attach to things that we weren't getting in previous relationships, but just in a more exposed package, if that makes sense. Go ahead, Siobhan.
It does make sense. And you hit two things I definitely got to talk about. So the first attachment, right? Asking, is it subjective? Technically, no. Okay. The only way it can be subjective is when you're looking at, am I okay with how attached this person is or is not to me? That's the subjective part, right?
Okay. But
what's called attachment theory in psychology. And there are some therapists, because every therapist has to decide, what is my belief system with how clients should be treated? So should I go with cognitive behavioral therapy, aka CBT, aka we're looking at the connection between what you think and how you act? That's usually a favorite of therapists because it's very evidence-based and it's very scientific. Literally, it's proven. When you think this way, it causes you to act this way. So we take away this thought, then you're going to act differently, right? I'm a CBT therapist, but I'm also what's called PCT, which is person-centered therapy, meaning I'm focusing on you as an individual. I want to establish a relationship and rapport with you. I'm not just going to give you the same treatment as I do my other clients. Like, if you're a client who is very shy, then I'm going to tailor my approach because you're shy. If you're a client who likes to use slang, I may tailor my approach to where you feel more comfortable using your slang or whatever vernacular, right? It's more person-centered. It's more accepting a client where they are, meeting them where they are, empathizing with them. So I'm a good hybrid. The reason I bring up that is because there are therapists who are literally called attachment theory therapists. The way they're going to treat your problem is looking at what your attachment style is. So there's four different attachment styles. You ready?
Ready.
The first one is secure. That's me. That's the wife who's like, oh, babe, you going, you know, to work overnight? Yeah. I just want to make sure you safe, you good. I don't have to know every single detail, but, you know, I'm not going to be questioning like, oh, well, did you go here? Or let me look up what places are. I'm not doing that. It's, you know, to do right. And if you do wrong, my personal belief, God's going to spin the block for me. He's going to let me know what wrong you did. I don't have to go searching. I don't need to go through your phone. You do you, dog, and we're going to deal with it later, right?
You said God's going to spin the block. I like
spin the block.
Right. I am very secure. I wasn't always that way, though. I want to throw that out there. Okay. It took me working on myself, for real. But that's a secure attachment. People who are secure attached, they trust easily. They're very in tune with their emotions. They communicate very well, typically. If they are upset, they can communicate that directly. And they lead with, like, cooperative and flexible behavior and relationships. So I'm not going to, like, try to strong arm you, like, oh, you hurt me, you disappointed me, you need to do this. It's like, okay, I want you to be more vulnerable, bruh, so I'm going to be more vulnerable. So you can, you know, I'm leading by example, right? That's secure. Then you have what's called anxious. This is where some of your codependency habits start developing. These people, they naturally have a sensitive nervous system. So they're more in tune to anxiety, like literally biologically. Ain't even their fault. They can tend to struggle with communicating directly. So they might be a little bit passive, maybe passive aggressive at times, but they struggle to be assertive. And they tend to act out, and I use that loosely, but they act out when they're triggered. So maybe they try to make their partner jealous or shame them or guilt trip them. Then you have what's called the avoidance style, okay? The avoidance style is in two different ways, and that makes up attachment style number 3 and 4. Avoidant fearful, that's your codependent people too. They are more dependent in relationships. They really fear rejection. They don't like rejection. They don't like abandonment. So if the relationship is rocky, they're thinking, oh, snap, it's about to end. Let me prepare myself. I might even break up with you first because you're not going to break up with me. Or I need to do everything I can to save the relationship, right? Usually low self-esteem, high anxiety. Then you have, that's avoidant fearful, okay? Then the last one is avoidant dismissive. These are the people who are going to downplay the importance of relationships. It's not that big of a deal. Catch flights, not feelings. Those kind of people, they're usually very, very extremely self-reliant. Like me, myself, and I, Beyonce, irreplaceable to the left. It's all about me. I'm all I got. I can depend on me. You can't trust these people out here. They're not loyal. They can become very vulnerable when there's a big, big crisis, though. So with attachment theory, everybody has an attachment style, no matter how you look at it. It's just a matter of where your actions operate out of the most. And that usually goes back to something I would urge listeners to think about. How well do they deal with abandonment and rejection? Because that's usually where codependency is bred from. That's the breeding ground for it. So if you didn't receive the love that you needed when you were younger, that's going to show up. Something I want everybody to remember, okay? What you don't address from your childhood, you will address in your relationship. It's going to come up. It has to. Have no choice. So if you're looking at a relationship, you need to ask yourself, what are my needs? What do I need? What needs need to actually be met? Because that's going to determine what type of attachment style you have and how you show up. And then to go back to what you said, the second thing, philosophical, it goes back to what you're attaching to in relationships. So if you need to feel secure, you need to feel loved, because maybe your mom didn't give you a lot of validation growing up. Maybe your dad was really hard on you, just overbearing and very critical, right? So now maybe you're looking for somebody who is very soft, who has a gentle touch, who's going to validate you, give you those words of affirmation, right? Yeah. Maybe they are more giving than you've ever realized before. When you need that, as healthy as it sounds, it can work against you, because now you may be codependent with what that person's doing. And that's when it becomes more performative. So it's, I love my wife, and not saying this is your situation, but just, you know,
tweaking. Oh, no, no. It could be any one of our listeners. No, go ahead.
Right. So like, if your wife is super loving and tender, it can be, well, I didn't receive this validation. So now she realizes, okay, well, he gives me the most attention or the most praise, or where he gives me the most fulfilling feelings. He acts the way I want him to act when I meet that need, when I give him love, right? And validation. So let me turn this up. Not realizing she doesn't even want to validate you that much. Like, she wants to validate you. She wants to validate like 3 times a week, but she realizes she gets more out of you if she does it 7 days a week. So now she's become performative and your relationship is more transactional and is not as genuine as it should be.
Yep. I think you hit the nail on the head as far as what's going on in relationships today. So we'll go to the second question. So it kind of goes back into what you just said, right? A couple moments ago. The issue with finding happiness, right? Mm-hmm. We spoke about it on our last show that happiness is basically meaning things happening in your life, right? And I had saw that you had a great clip on, you know, you're talking about as far as happiness is an inside job, but we as people were so worried about the second job, which is the outside job, right? So let's elaborate on that a little bit, right? And we've spoken about that as far as happiness within and with our men, with the relationships, and understanding what you need versus what you want, right? Looking at it within yourself. And I think for me, you know, I have found and learned that being able to still be in a happy marriage, happy relationship, but still working on yourself is a good thing. And I feel like sometimes that is so misunderstood within dating and relationships, to where people come into dating and relationships thinking that person has to be 100%. You know, been worked on themselves, reflection period, you know, don't bring none of that negativity in my circle. So I feel like there is no 100% happiness, right? I always joke, I won't say the Netflix show. I've always joke about this. Me and my wife always joke about this. Take the 70%. take the 70% and work from that. So let's discuss this, right? Why is there such an issue with finding happiness today?
Yeah, it's such a great question. Because here's the thing: happiness is so simple and it's so easily attained, but we get in our own way, and it makes it so difficult to get. Yeah, it's like we overcomplicate it for no reason. I mean, well, there's reasons, That's why I'm a therapist. But overcomplicate it more than it needs to be. So have you ever heard someone who is a transient? And for those who may not know what that is, it's basically a homeless person, but that's the correct terminology. So instead of saying like homeless or hobo, they're a transient, right? They don't have anywhere to go. They kind of wander. So have you ever heard transients say this expression? Or not even the expression, but have you ever heard transients say how happy they are, even though they literally have nothing?
Maybe an outfit,
you know, that.
But
they have nothing. And there's been literally study after study we learned about in graduate school. Literally, the people with the least amount of things are oftentimes the happiest. The reason why is because happiness is intrinsic. It is not about what you have or what you attain. Now, yes, you can be happy on the pursuit of things. So me going to graduate school and, you know, grinding to get my master's, or me helping somebody, whatever it is, those things can bring happiness technically, but it's the pursuit, it's not the final result. It is literally having that goal that is worthy of struggle, of adversity, and overcoming it that will bring happiness. The reason why people are usually not happy, first you got to ask yourself, what do you think happiness is supposed to be about? So I'm thinking of my clients who are depressed, right? And when I ask them this, they often think, well, being able to have a good job and being able to get up and not feeling sad. And they give me a list of things, and it's usually pretty superficial, y'all. It's, you know, it's not anything that's pretty astounding. But the biggest thing I get them to realize is your perception, is what you think is supposed to make you happy. So what if we switch that thought process, right? What if we look at something other than what you were conditioned to think is supposed to bring you happiness, number one. And then two, when you look at it being an inside job versus outside. Now, you said something really interesting a second ago, that when people are getting in relationships, that they feel you need to have everything together because, you know, no negative vibes, positive vibes only, right? Yeah, I'm a therapist, and I'm letting y'all know as a therapist, I hate that expression. I hate it. Positive vibes only. First of all, that does not exist. There is no such thing as positive vibes only. Because how can you have good if there was no bad? How can you know who you find attractive if you've never seen someone who's ugly? Like, there's right? They have to exist. It just does. So it's okay to say mainly positive vibes. I'll take that. But not positive vibes only, because you're not being realistic. And when you have this idea of, I only want positivity, you normally technically attract negativity. Because when you say you just want something, the other things come to challenge. Are you worthy of that just something? Do you know how to handle that just something? Do you know how to recognize that just something? Yeah. You know, so I can't stand it. Please, if you're listening, please stop saying positive vibes.
I love the fact that you, a therapist, somebody who actually gets paid to think about this stuff, has said this, because this is stuff we say all of the time, just based on our personal observations about relationships. Like, hey, what's it called? Are you, like you said, stuff will stand up to challenge that thing that you all, that's all you want. For instance, right now we're seeing, there's this guy, he runs a channel called Impact Theory. And I believe his name is Thomas Bilyeu. I might be butchering it. I apologize, sir. But there was an episode that came out that I watched, and I favorited it immediately because I was like, I'm going to revisit this. But it was essentially it wasn't about happiness, but it was about success. And essentially what he was saying was, the reason most people don't succeed or they burn out is because they tie the happy feeling or the feeling of happiness to that moment when they achieve. You know, so it's like, oh, I bought the car, I bought the house, I got the good job. So they tied their happiness to that moment. But once they hit that, they dip immediately because it's like, all right, I got the thing. Now what?
What's next? Literally, yeah, you're so forward thinking, you're not able to be present. That's why therapists like to talk about mindfulness. Mm-hmm. Mindfulness is literally meaning you are being mindful, aka present, aka aware, aka insightful of what is going on around you. So like if you're having an anxiety attack, right? And I'm telling you to be mindful, I'm gonna give you the 5-4-3-2-1 coping strategy. What that is, think of, you're using your five senses. So I might need help with this, y'all, because sometimes I'm forgetting them, to be honest with you. Keeping it real. So I will tell you to do the easiest thing first. So you're about to have an anxiety attack. Okay, five things you see. So no matter if the anxiety attack's at work, is at home, it's at the car, look around and you start saying five things you see. Then four things that you hear. Three things that you can touch. Two things that you can smell, one thing you can taste. And we normally reserve taste for one, because if you don't have food accessible, you know, it's kind of hard to say, taste five different things, you know, unless you're like Chick-fil-A or something. And that's like five different sauces. But other than that,
that's a lot of money.
Right? It's preaching and teaching to be aware, because the more aware you are, the more in tune you are with growth and realizing what you need healing from. And with happiness, you know, I love that you bring that up, what that guy said, because you're thinking of the end goal instead of everything you had to overcome to get to the goal. So let's look at how you persevered, how you didn't get that loan, but you decided to keep going until you got the loan, right? Or you decided to save a little bit more, which meant you said no to going out to club a couple nights, or maybe you didn't go to Chick-fil-A. Maybe you ate some ramen noodles instead and you grinded it out. Like, look at that. That's happiness to an extent.
Yeah.
Depending on what your worthiness is, you know? It's just, happiness is really an intrinsic factor, meaning it's totally inside. When you make an extrinsic factor, meaning on the outside, you messed up. Why? Outside is too fickle. Things change. If I'm depending on my husband to make me happy, what if he had a bad day at work?
Yeah.
You know, 2 days ago, his car battery died. He didn't even leave the house. He was leaving, the car battery died. He had to jump it with my battery. Then he got to work. Then it started to get, you know, he had all that stuff going on. He had to go get a new battery, right? Of course he's pissed off. He should be. That's $200 technically down the drain. But you know what I did as a wife and a therapist, y'all? I said this, babe, you know what? That is $200. It feels like it's down the drain. But guess what? We are not in Florida anymore. We're in Virginia. And I may not have a degree in science, but I feel like because it's cold up here, now your cute little blue car has like a really cool brand new battery to help us with Virginia weather. You know? And you begin to the gratitude portion of it. Like, thank God we have $200, because that would have broke somebody's bank account, you know, elsewhere. You know, being more mindful, being more aware. And so if I depended on him to make me happy, knowing he had a pretty jacked up morning and afternoon, he would have missed the mark. My happiness, which is intrinsic, has now become based on him, which is extrinsic. So what happens if he can't give that to me? I'm up the creek. I'm unhappy. But because I can dig deep and I can make it about me, I can then spread my happiness to him and make him laugh. Because my whole Virginia, Florida thing made absolutely no sense, but it made him laugh though. Right?
I will respond to that. That's something my wife would say, and it would probably be like, that would probably make me even more pissed off, because I'm like, did she not hear what I just said? But again, you know, I'm glad you said that, because I used to be that guy that I would get up in the morning and be like, you know, I want a better job, right? Mm-hmm. I want a nicer car. And it made me sit here and think about it, and to say, and it reminds me of kind of what me and Jay were talking about, was like, you have to kind of put in the work, right? Mm-hmm. To say, you know, I was depressed at one point, to say, you know, why aren't things going the way they're going, right? And it's because I was thinking with such a low bar that I was keeping myself there, to the fact that okay, things are just gonna be the same because I'm thinking the same, and in retrospect and result, they're gonna stay the same.
Yes.
Right. So it's just one of those things where now that you speak on what true happiness is, because that's really what it is, and it made me sit here and think about it, to the fact that, man, I'm out here spending all this money on things that I missed out as a kid, but you know, being married, having a nice job, having this podcast, being able to wake up, being aware, being able to get up in the morning and think creatively and logically and mentally, I just feel like, you know, that's the true kind of avenue of happiness. And I feel like the more and more we start to think about that and bring that into perspective, and people really start to think that way. And maybe potentially it's my old age too. Maybe. I don't know. But you know what I mean? I just feel like sometimes, you know, that's the true, and that's the inside job of happiness, right? A lot of the attachments and materialistic things, the nice cars, the jewelry, the trips, those are outside jobs, in my opinion. You know, so I'm really glad you kind of clarify that. So I go ahead.
All right, I wanted to share with you quickly two things that you reminded me of just now with that disclosure. Number one, because I do deal with a lot of people with depression, and if they don't have depression, they're just unhappy. Because you don't have to have depression in order to be unhappy. Like, you can be unhappy and not be clinically diagnosed with depression.
Okay.
If you are listening and you feel you are one of those people who deal with depression or just unhappiness in general, remember this. In order to have more, you have to become more.
Okay.
Becoming is not about doing. It's not about working more hours or necessarily getting the better job to bring more money, etc. Becoming is about the evolution of your own healing.
Okay.
So when you give gratitude, when you give thanks, when you're able to tap in to that benevolence, right, of just being able to exist and being here and thinking of how you can push forward, push the envelope, how you can impact others. Because remember what we said at the beginning, it's about human connectivity, right? We're about connection. When you can focus on that, how can the heavens and the universe and the earth and God not give you more? It literally doesn't make sense, because you're vibrating naturally at a higher energy. And energy is real. In case y'all listening to this and y'all don't believe me, I'm telling you, you're wrong, okay?
Yeah.
I know.
Energy is real. Energy is definitely real. It is.
What you give out is what you're going to get back. So when you're constantly fixating on the things that make you unhappy, how can the universe and God spin the block for you and give you things that you feel you rightfully deserve?
There are two things that reminds me of. One is Vibrate Higher, a song off the Outkast Love Below Speaker Box album. I love that album. the other thing is this conversation reminded me of there's a conversation, it's an old conversation between, and I'm mad at myself because I have forgotten their names right now, but it's an old civil rights thinker, a dude and a woman. They had a conversation that was televised, and there was one thing that they said in the conversation that stuck out to me, and the woman basically told the man who was speaking on behalf of, I guess, other Black men involved in the civil rights movement and everything like that. She was like, "Hey, we get the worst of you," and the point the man was trying to make was essentially, we go outside and we fight the world. And so when we come home, we don't have the best of us to give, because we have to give that to everybody else.
Wow.
And so I can't remember I don't think there was a resolution they came to. It was just sort of a point taken sort of situation. But it stuck out to me because it's like, this is two civil rights leaders who are, essentially, both of them are working towards the same goal, which is the advancement of people of color, of Black people. But, you know, they're at the end of the day, the one thing that they want from each other is just, hey, can you, you know, can you be this thing for me? So they're looking to the other people for that internal happiness. And this is during the civil rights movement, you know, the thing that was the era that was about love of your Blackness, love of self, and all of that other stuff. But we're still looking outwardly for different things. And I know that's sort of an abstract caveat, and I apologize. That's just
how that's good.
That was a
good
point. Yeah, that was a great point.
I will add to that, Jay, about when we had a conversation with Robert Moore about the capacity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
About your capacity of how much can you be within yourself, right? How much are you going to give to somebody else, and how much are you going to keep in within yourself to be capable of? What are you capable of based off the capacity of how much you have internally?
And yeah. I think it's a good caveat you brought up, because it still goes back to my second point that I wanted to bring up, that philosophical said a moment ago about looking at, hey, I don't have to have all of these things to be happy.
Yeah.
I don't even know if you realized, but the true gift was what you did with that, because you technically got a better job, right? And you started obtaining more things technically.
Yeah.
You started getting things that you didn't have as a child. Instead of looking at what you physically bought, find the happiness in your power to transform. Because what you did was you recognized your unmet need, the need of just having physical security, technically. Being able to have things that you just want. If you want something, technically, what is it? What says that you shouldn't be able to have it? So if you do want a certain car or certain clothes or whatever, technically wanting that doesn't make it you a bad person, or it's not as negative people try to make it seem. The problem is when you get caught up in just that, of course. But still, the fact that you want it and you were able to get it, focus on the fact that you were able to provide yourself with that unmet need, period. Yeah. And when you start to tap in to look at the power of you, the power of you being able to manifest things, because you said, I want that. So you were able to work for it and go get it. That's beautiful. And that can bring happiness as well.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. That's actually a good point. So I will go into our third question here. Let's speak on closure in relationships, right? I feel like this is a big, big thing, right? I feel like this goes into, there are so many unclosed doors, right? With relationships, dating, and marriage today, that, and it even goes back to the attachment, right? People are still attached to people for whatever reason that may be, because the door hasn't been closed. So let's speak on that a little bit, you know, how to find that closure in relationships. By all means, let's I would love to hear you guys' opinion on this.
Closure. Jay, you want to say something before I dive into it? I'm gonna tell you why I don't like it, but I'm gonna let you go.
Okay.
What I have to say about closure. I think too many of us try and move on without getting it. I think our idea of closure is flawed. I think we assume that closure is just, oh, I'm not thinking about it anymore, so I've gotten closure. But I don't think we are properly equipped to, a lot of us aren't properly equipped to actually achieve closure. At least not in any healthy way. I think most of us, I think that's why we carry so much baggage with us from relationship to relationship. Mm. Because we don't do the work that we need to do to end that chapter and then start a new one, it's just, all right, we're in the middle of this chapter, whether it's the grief portion of the chapter, and then another. Sometimes a whole new book will open and we'll just start that, as opposed to, all right, let me close this off. Let me do the work I need to heal. Let me take the time I need, and then let me jump into this new thing.
Okay.
But yeah, I think that's it. Oh, and I think I found it. It was a conversation between James Baldwin and Nikki Giovanni that was going to drive me crazy.
Oh, okay, I'm definitely gonna look that up.
Yeah.
Yes, I have. Okay, super, super quick. I know everybody can't see me, but I gotta show you guys because he brought it up. I have a James Baldwin bookmark. Oh no, it's not here. Okay, can I just show y'all this real quick? It's like such. These are my bookmarks. They're like so dope. Get Out. It got Whitley from A Different World. Thriller, Black Power. Lisa Bonet. Spike Lee.
You got a whole collection. I need the one you
Yeah,
find
I'm
me.
gonna have to give y'all her information. We got Biggie, Salinas, Yui, Dwayne. Wait, couple things, but I have a James Baldwin one, but it must be in my bedroom. Okay, sorry, I digress. So let me tell you about closure. I have an issue with closure because, and you basically touched on it, Jay. People misunderstand it. To be pretty morbid with you, closure is just a fancy. Wait, let me count. How many layers is it? One, two, three, four, five. Okay, seven. I want to make sure I got it right. Closure is a fancy seven-letter word. That really equates to I'm just going to continue a toxic cycle. That's it. Because people vie for it so much, they allow themselves to get stuck in what is toxic, what's unhealthy, what just doesn't serve them. So they'll keep engaging with that person that they do need closure from, or they will keep going in a cycle of getting a new partner who's just like the person who they
Good
finished
point.
because they have unfinished business with that person. But here's the crazy thing. They don't realize that. And I don't mean crazy as in like, oh, you're crazy, because I don't call people crazy. I mean crazy as in wild. The wild thing about it is they're doing that subconsciously. They don't realize that. It's literally their subconscious mind seeking it out.
So
Closure.
let me look. Is that why we have a lot of serial daters going on? Is that
Oh, yes.
why?
I have so many of them as clients right now. Yes. Yes. Yeah, serial dater is that's a real thing. It happens because they haven't come to terms with what it is they need healing from. So they continue to perpetuate the damage that they do need healing from.
So lack of closure or needing it at all is basically a lack of self-awareness of healing from what you went through to what you now need moving forward, correct?
To an extent, yes, I would say lack of closure is what people find as their excuse, or it's what fuels everything else you just said, them cycle.
So is that why potentially a lot of men and women tend to not date based off of what they need?
Absolutely. They will tend to go. So here's the thing. Remember earlier when I talked about that unmet need, especially childhood, et cetera. Unmet needs are going to make decisions for you if you don't meet them or at least regulate them and understand them. People are screaming. They're like, hey, look at us. We don't like this. Because remember, we like connection. We like everything to be copacetic. Human beings, our biggest goal, even though I said we love connection, is self-preservation. That's why, God forbid, if I get a cut right now, my body will heal it. The Band-Aid's not going to heal it. Stitches won't heal it. A&D ointment won't heal it. It's my body healing it. Those things just aid in the healing process. So we are naturally designed to protect ourselves. That's how, when it comes to mental health, if you have somebody who has a very significant trauma, they can technically start to dissociate. Their psyche says, whoa, this is too much. I can't handle this. We don't need this to happen to us. And their psyche can literally break and another personality can form because the personality wants to protect that original whole self that has just been traumatized and says, I don't even want you to know about this trauma, Siobhan. So now this new personality is formed and it can continue splitting. Or if you're not that extreme, because everyone doesn't have DID, which is short for dissociative identity disorder. What y'all may have known before is multiple personality disorder. We don't call it that anymore. We call it DID. So maybe you're not in that series of situation, because I just want to, give a disclaimer for everyone. That does not happen the way y'all think it may be happening. Don't let the movies fool you. It's pretty rare. Right. That was such a movie though. Oh my God. That was my movie. And then Glass. Oh,
yeah.
But people can dissociate in general,
Okay.
meaning they can feel like an out-of-body experience, or you hear people say things like, I feel like I'm just watching myself from the outside, or I don't feel like myself. It feels like this is happening to somebody else, not me. That's technically a form of dissociation. So the
Okay.
reason I bring that up, we have these traumas that happen to us in relationships or even before relationships. And so now unmet needs develop. And like I said, we like self-preservation. We want to feel good. We want to feel comfortable, cozy. You know, we want to have a cush little lifestyle. So when that happens, the unmet need does whatever it can to get met. So if you feel like you didn't get proper love or attention, and you find yourself in a relationship and the person is very controlling, but they're telling you, hey, I check on you so often because I care about your well-being. Like, I want to make sure you're good. You may start thinking, okay, but I don't like the way it makes me feel, but that's what they say, so it must be true, and I really care for them. And they are kind of protective. Like, they do help me with stuff, so I'm gonna give them the benefit of a doubt. It's way easier said than done. You'll think that, and then no matter how much they ramp up controlling behaviors, you still feel, well, they care about me. This is normal. This is love. I now feel loved. I feel like that unmet need of feeling loved, feeling secure is now being met. So then if you break up with that person, now you're in that cycle of, I know that this is what technical love looked like because they told it to me. We just didn't work. So now you're going to gravitate towards somebody who is controlling as well, or who is showing love in whatever way they feel they can manipulate you and tell you that they're showing love. That makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
The thing about closure, the reason why I don't like it, I told y'all, because it oftentimes tricks you, right?
Yeah.
So this is how you receive closure without having the other person. First, you got to realize you don't need someone for closure. Closure is all about you. It's an internal job, just like happiness is intrinsic. So is closure. Closure, what it really means is just acceptance. That's it. Closure
good
is
point.
Acceptance with what has happened. It doesn't mean you like it. It doesn't mean you're happy, but you accept it, because you cannot have peace until you accept something for who or what the situation is or who they are. So the first thing you need to do, be objective. It's not about you. When it comes to why that person acted the way that they acted, they have whatever they got going on in their life, their own traumas, their own misunderstandings, biases, prejudices, their own healing. So what they've done is not about you showing up a certain way. So take yourself out of it. Stop putting yourself in the situation, right? Be objective. Realize what they did is what they did. It's not because of who you are that the relationship didn't work out, et cetera.
I will add to that as a caveat. I feel like that can go back to the people people pleasing, as far as like trying to control what someone else did to you.
That's a very good point. Yes.
Try to control what other people did to you, and try to control it to the fact that you're almost saying it's okay. Just treat me differently next time. So they kind of accepting that. Not really the closure, but accepting, but being very apologetic to the fact that it's okay what you did to me. I like and even love you enough to like, let's make this work. But really, you're supposed to accept the fact that this is not the position you're supposed to be in. But the longer you don't accept that, you know what I mean? The more trauma you're going to deal with it, right?
Yes, but I would say it's not about saying technically it's okay what you did to me. It's more of, I recognize what you did to me. I understand the reasons why you did it.
Do they though?
If they want to do the work, if they want to try to understand, because here's the thing, you don't have to understand why people hurt you. You just have to understand it doesn't have nothing to do with you.
But 9 times out of 10, you're going to do the work for them.
And that's the problem.
Yeah. Nine times out of 10, you're going to, because it, in my opinion, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're with somebody, let's say, I mean, the first 6 months you're in a dating honeymoon period. And then after that 6 months, you begin to transition into, who are we as people? Can we start to be together, right? That's year one. When you start to hit year two, year three, year four, year five, potentially, you know who this person is. And if you're constantly arguing, you're constantly splitting up, you're constantly having issues, one minute you're together, next minute you're not, this is what it is. It is what it is.
Yeah.
But I mean, Phil, that's what makes an exciting relationship. That's
what... Wait, what part?
I mean, that's spicy. You fight so you can make up. That's what that is.
That's
you
true. Know
that. Oh, no, it's so funny. I'm glad you said that because I know, like, you're joking, whatever. But yeah. I think
no,
so
he's
funny.
Serious.
Like, even I know you're joking. I'm so glad you brought that up. And it even goes back to what Philosophical said at the beginning about women versus men. That's where a lot of my women get stuck, y'all. Mm. They feel like, well, it's boring. There's no passion.
That goes into the next question. Yeah. Wow.
And it's like, hold on, baby. Let me tell you something as a therapist. Do not confuse passion with dysfunction. Those are two different things.
Wow.
Okay. Passion does not equal dysfunction, right?
Put that on the t-shirts.
It's not
the same, because I can love you and I can show you passion, especially in the bedroom, right?
Yeah.
But still respect you, still listen to your opinion. For my married folks, this is going to make y'all cringe a little bit, but I feel like married people understand it a little bit more than single, aka just married people. The submissive factor, right?
Oh, yeah. I have a lot to say about that.
Bring me back for that one. So yeah, it's people confuse passion for dysfunction, but all the dysfunction is like what Jay was joking about, the whole arguing, blah, blah, blah. That is just unmet needs running wild. It's usually insecurity. They don't feel comfortable with who they are and their status of the relationship and feeling like the relationship is working. Thus, they're acting out. That was that anxious attachment style I was telling you.
Yep.
No, but people think that. My poor women. I think I call them my babies, but these are my clients who are between like 19, 23.
Oh,
my little female babies, they just tell me like, Miss Siobhan, your husband, a guy like him, that's boring. Like, I'm like, baby, he boring because he pays the bills and he doesn't hit me. Like, wait, what are you talking about?
But I bet you from the, like, somebody like me meeting your husband, I'd be like, this dude is in peace. He is in tranquility.
Very. And he's elite, if that tells you anything.
Yeah. He's in tranquility.
I'm the Scorpio.
Oh, yeah. I'm a Scorpio also.
Siobhan, don't do that because I'm
a Scorpio.
Scorpio
also.
Okay, don't do this.
Okay, so y'all know how we are.
Don't do this.
You can be bored and it's Tuesday. Come on now.
Yeah. I mean, no, I will say there are periods where, like, I get up and I'm like, yo, I need to make somebody angry today. I need to start some
trouble. Don't get me wrong. There are days when I wake up and I choose violence, but I mean,
even as a therapist, I'm like, okay, we're about to have this argument. Technically, I should. So what but seriously, it is dysfunction, and people confuse it with passion. You know why? Because there's a lot of emotion in it. Yeah. People confuse the emotion and the dysregulation, aka not being able to like keep it peaceful and keep it respectful, with passion. That's not passion. That's just really unregulated emotions, and you need therapy. That's it.
And I will add to that. I feel like we as men and women confuse dysfunction for love.
Yeah.
Dysfunction for caring, for endearment, nurturing. And it, because I feel like nowadays, you know, I've been there, and I know a lot of our men are either going through or have been there, you know, feel like a assertive woman, a demanding woman, a woman that argues, they confuse that with a woman that, oh, she's just speaking her mind. She's just telling me what she wants. Mm-hmm. She's just letting me know how she feels about situations. But on the other end, you don't have any respect.
You
know
don't.
What I mean?
And you're being abusive. Women are very, very abusive, and we don't want to talk about that usually. Mm. A lot of times when we talk about the emasculation of men,
oh my goodness.
Like you can't be vulnerable. You show me a man who's been emasculated, I'm gonna show you a woman who's had to feel she had to strip his power away to assert herself to me.
Why is that? Why do you feel that way? Why do you feel this like that?
Because we know that your manhood is pride for you. Your manhood
okay. Yep,
is.
Yep, yep. We've been speaking on that.
You know, it makes you feel good.
Yeah.
You want a man to do things, you stroke his ego, literally. You speak words of affirmation. You praise him. You do things and say things that make him feel like what he believes the man is. So,
but have you, I'm sorry to cut you off, but have you seen the movement where, and not to get off topic, women don't want to stroke the ego anymore?
Oh, yes.
That is a real movement. And yeah, I keep saying it's a real thing.
I'm interested in this. Where we had a discussion. We asked Winfred this question, which episode coming out next week, y'all. This week, next week. So Winfred is he's a preacher, and he's a real good guy that we met doing a during a. I'll call it a revival, but it was it was more like a retreat.
Forgiveness retreat.
Yeah, a forgiveness retreat. And the question came up, do you think there is an attack on manhood or masculinity? I believe was the question. I might be misremembering, and I apologize if I am. My argument was no if the... Well... My argument was more that if you know where you are rooted, nobody can attack you, so to speak.
I don't think that's true. I disagree with it, remember? I don't think that's true because there are a lot of men who don't know their roots. There are a lot of men who don't understand how to be rooted. A lot of men are out here searching through different avenues on how to be rooted. There are a lot of men out there.
You just agreed with me unofficially. Yeah, then.
But the reason why I disagree is because I'm seeing it in retrospect to yourself, right? Being very rooted, you know, searching through creativity, learning through creativity, learning yourself, get to know yourself. You're taking that reflection period. Just imagine the men who are in relationships today, enter in relationships who have no clue how to speak up for themselves.
I'm not disagreeing with that, but I think what I'm disagreeing with isn't that happens. Okay. What I'm disagreeing with is that this is a larger conspiracy from somewhere that, oh, they're just attacking men in general. I do think there are a lot of people who struggle with relationships and they feel like you said, there are a lot of people who feel like, oh, I'm done stroking a man's ego. So it feels like, oh, hey, we're under attack. But again, like I said, if...
So let me ask a question real quick, and I don't mean to cut you off. You feel it's a conspiracy, meaning that it's not true that men are being attacked. You don't feel this is a thing.
I don't feel it's a thing. What I feel like the issue is more of us are listless and what's it called? It goes back to this conversation. We are seeking externally for our roots. We are seeking externally for our happiness. We are seeking externally for something to ground us. So because we are seeking externally, the second something external tells us that, oh, you are not this thing, because we don't have that internal lightning rod or that internal grounding, we spin out of control. But if you have that, if you've done the work that Siobhan is talking about, if you've done the work that Winfred was talking about, if you've done the work that a lot of mental health professionals are talking about, then no matter what, now obviously we absorb what's like, we take stuff in, like it's very difficult to shut the world out completely. I'm not saying that that's how we operate or anything like that. What I'm saying is having that internal root helps prevent all of that stuff, or at least it dampens the blow when somebody said, like when somebody, perfect example. I was at work the other day, and four of my coworkers were around me, and we were just talking. Two of them were women, two of them were men. You know, it is what it, yeah. Like, that's just how it shook out. And they were, I told them, like, oh, I had been bald at one point, and they were like, oh, we don't believe you. So I showed them a picture. Mm-hmm. And sorry, the story is coming to an end. I don't want to take up too much time. But basically, I showed them a picture, and two of them said, bro, you look super old when you're bald. You should never do it again. And then two of them said, oh, no, you can pull it off. Now, I'll let y'all guess who said which, but... At, like,
I sure hope it wasn't the men that said that. I said,
It doesn't matter who said what, but at that time, like, whoever said it, like, I was okay in that moment just being like, y'all are tripping. I know I look good. Now I had a little extra weight on me, so I took that mm-hmm. off, and now I'm good. Yeah. But I'm good. I know I can pull off bald. I'm cool. And I was okay with that because, don't get me wrong, my hair, my hairline, like all of that sort of stuff, that's something I've struggled with before. But I've gotten to a place where it's like, you know what, as long as it's clean and as long as I'm happy with me, I'm good. I'll, like, a whole bunch of people have receding hairlines and a whole bunch of people have it worse than I do. So it is what it is. And I was able to move on. Whereas, you know, somebody else, like, I won't even say somebody else, myself, if this was maybe 3 months ago, somebody said something, I'd be like, I ain't never going bald again. I'm a grow dreads, you know, all this.
That's
other
true.
Stuff.
That's true. Like, that's very true.
I still want to try growing dreads, but that's for other reasons.
Well,
but,
you've been telling me that for 10 years, man. That's never happened.
First off, I grew my hair out. I had to cut it because I was getting a new job.
It's never happening, man. It's never happening, man. It's never happening, man.
It may not, but I'm okay with that.
He's been telling me that for 10 years, man.
It may not, but I'm okay with that.
Let it die.
Let me tell you why. So here's the thing about the closure piece with you. That was a really good example. Wait, you know what? I digress because I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. When it comes to what you said about being confident in who you are and roots, et cetera, right? It's about the security within yourself to not be swayed. But to your point, the problem is, and this is when people get in toxic relationships. I have clients who are in them now who I literally work through it with them. When you are confident, and you are said something on a daily basis or an every other day basis, your subconscious mind starts to pick it up. So there's a difference between subconscious and conscious mind. Conscious mind says, hey, I'm going to pick up this water bottle, or I'm going to turn my phone on silent, or I'm going to go eat some Thin Mint Girl Scout cookies. Conscious mind makes decisions. Subconscious mind is just as powerful, but you're not aware of it, literally. It does not have the power to accept or reject. So if I tell my subconscious mind every single day, I'm a millionaire, it's generally going to believe I'm a millionaire, and it's going to influence my conscious mind to make decisions in order to make the millionaire status happen. The problem, when you're in an abusive or a toxic relationship and someone is telling you something every day or every other day or just very often or frequently, your subconscious mind soaks it up and you start to believe it to where you don't even realize it. It affects your security. It affects your doubts, all of that stuff. So the great thing is, you know, you look good with a bald head, but if they constantly said it, at some point, you start to think like, well, dang, why did you say
that? Maybe I need a dread.
Here's the cool thing about it. The reason why you really were cool with it though, is because you found closure with it. And so whenever you're seeking closure, you have to ask yourself, what do I need closing first? You can't have closure, which is the act of closing without having something that you need to close. So like if I open this office door right now, closure would be me getting up and closing it. So mm-hmm. what is the issue that you're seeking closure from? Is it an unhealthy relationship? Is it feeling like you were not enough during that relationship? Is it you oversharing? You feel like you need to stop oversharing with your next partner? Do you feel like you spent too much money? You were doing the most. You need to stop being so helpful. You got to look at what you need closing from, aka what needs to be expelled from your life. So the first step we said for closure was to be objective, right? Remember, it's not about you. That person's stuff is about them. But the second thing is you need to look at the feeling that they cause you. And that is the feeling that you need to deal with. It wasn't about them hurting you specifically. It was about the hurt, period. So say if your partner made you feel inferior throughout the whole relationship, look at that feeling of inferiority and ask yourself, when were other times I felt inferior, and trace it back, because that's your real issue, the inferiority that keeps popping up. Okay. And I would say lastly, how to receive closure, choose to act out of whatever it is that you need. So if you feel like I needed love or I needed acceptance, make your decisions when it comes to that person out of love or out of forgiveness or whatever it was. You don't have to live in the hurt on a daily basis that that person caused you. Now, will you experience that hurt on a daily basis? You could, especially should you choose not to heal. But just because you experience infidelity or abuse or whatever it is, doesn't mean you have to make decisions out of it.
Gotcha.
That makes sense?
Oh, that makes great sense. That makes great sense. So we're going to go ahead and, because I think we've touched a lot of our next two questions kind of lumped up in one. It was great points. Great conversation.
I feel like we need to have a whole five episode series.
A five part series to this.
Yes.
I definitely agree. We're definitely probably going to have to hit these topics again and get some part two, because I feel like people are going to have a lot of questions about this. So we're going to go right into our wrap it up session with Miss Siobhan Jack. This is a section where we give our guests, they give gems, let the people know what's going on, what they can learn from. As I like to say, you have the floor, man.
All right. Thanks for the floor. I'd be remiss, first of all, if I didn't thank y'all for this opportunity. This was like an amazing conversation. It feels like a whole therapy session just for me personally. So I'm very grateful for that. I want the listeners to know the biggest thing about your life when it comes to moving forward, or when it comes to having more or being better. Rule number one, I tell every single client therapy, you can't heal what you don't reveal. So the more you keep within and you choose not to reveal, you won't receive deliverance. You won't receive healing from it. You're just breeding secrecy. You're breeding shame. You're breeding guilt. And it's very difficult to crawl out of it. It's possible, but you don't have to go through that. So reveal, be transparent with yourself, be open, seek therapy. Therapy is normal. I'm a therapist and I have a therapist. If I don't have a therapist, something's wrong. Why? Because I am helping people almost daily, because I'm off on Fridays in the weekends, but I'm helping people a lot during the week and they unload on me and I need to have an outlet. Now, that doesn't mean I go to my therapist and say, girl, let me tell you what such and such. It's not that. It's more about the clients who stick with me. If I feel inadequate as a therapist, or if somebody's trauma just really affected me a certain way, right? But mainly my therapist helps me with my own stuff, because I don't have everything together. I'm really good at helping my clients get it together, but I don't have everything together. I need to process stuff that happened in my childhood, things that I've been through in romantic relationships. You know, I can't help you go where I haven't gone myself. And I'm very big on practicing what I preach. So therapy is normal, y'all, especially my listeners who are men and people of color and Black people. Do it. Stop just relying on Jesus. And I love the Lord. Lord knows I do. I love the Lord and I'm a Christian, but that doesn't mean anything. Stop relying just on Jesus or just on your grandparents or just on your family members. Therapists, we have degrees for a reason. We have a lot of debt from our degree for a reason, because we receive training and we want to help you. get an unbiased opinion. Get somebody who doesn't have a dog in the fight, aka therapist. Whether you stay with him or not, whether you decide to tell somebody how you feel or not, isn't going to make us love you any less or think less of you, et cetera. So get that unbiased opinion. Come to us. I just want everyone to know that you don't have to stay where you are right now. There's better. If you've thought about better, if you've thought about something different, that means it's attainable just because you thought about it. Even if you don't feel like it is attainable. So do something about it. Please, please, please go to therapy. Make sure you look up the therapist credentials, Google us, do all your background check that you got to do on us. It's normal. The average person goes to 3 to 5 therapists before they get the therapist for them. Average person. So you might have to fire 3 to 5 different therapists before you get the right one. But don't let that discourage you. Because if you're not connecting with us, it's not going to work. So I just want to inspire everybody. Please, please, please reveal so that you can heal. And know that if you think about better, you can have it. It's attainable. You deserve it. So please go to therapy.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. We've been requested, and I know Jay has requested sometimes to have a therapist on here. We've spoken sparingly, but I'm glad we got a chance to speak about it today and how important therapy is to our people. Make sure you guys follow Ms. Siobhan Clark. She's a therapist, licensed mental counselor, life coach, author. Her book is entitled Road Travel, My Therapeutic Journey, which is also a therapeutic tracker, founder, and also listed in the Psychology Today. Her website is www.createanewcounseling.com, and her Instagram and I assume socials are also Create a New Counseling is her Instagram. Really appreciate you taking the time coming
Thank
out.
You so
what
much.
A great what dope a great conversation. Really, really dope conversation. We're gonna have to make sure she comes back on for part two. Definitely.
Yeah, show us some love, Pete.
Show us some love. Show us some love. Also follow us on YouTube at Let's Rock Podcast and also on Instagram on Let's Rock Podcast. We are everywhere. Apple, Google Podcasts. Make sure you guys like, share, subscribe. Let us know, man, how you guys felt about this. You know what I mean? Continuing entering toxic relationships, you know, putting others first, you know, issue with finding happiness is an inside job and outside job. You know, love to hear your thoughts on this. And as Ms. Siobhan said, there is no such thing as closure in relationships. It's about acceptance. Love to hear you guys' feedback on that. I bet a lot of people didn't think about that. It makes me kind of think about it too. So make sure you guys follow her, follow Let's Rock Podcast. Really appreciate you guys being here with us on this journey. I'm philosophical and we're out, y'all.
I'm Jay Echo. Take it easy.
Bye. Man, appreciate you guys having me. Shout out to y'all, man. And yeah, I'm happy to be here, man.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored to be here, man. You guys are doing amazing things.
It's good, man. We're doing good. I see you guys looking great.
Well, I appreciate y'all for having me out, taking y'all time and promoting positive black image.